a Folkcast interview special. Ashley Hutchings tells us of the latest and last Morris On album, The Mother of All Morris. Ashley Hutchings once more into Folkcast. Hi Ashley, how are you doing?
Not bad, Phil, not bad at all. Lots happening at the moment.
Good, well it's good to have you back. We know you're a very busy guy. You're about to head out on the road with the Albion Band for another Christmas tour. The latest and last, we're told, Morris On album is fresh in the shops, which is what we're here to talk about particularly. What else is on your radar at the moment?
Well, there's the Rainbow Chasers, which is my lovely group that where my heart is, if you like. And we have a new member coming in, Joe Topping, who's from the Northwest. And that means we're rehearsing. So we're rehearsing in a new member right now, and then we start gigging. But I'm also juggling with other things. You know, there's the Anglo-Italian album that Ken is heavily involved in, that we've been making forever. That finally seems to be coming out in the new year. So there's quite a lot of things happening, yeah.
Good. A lot of balls in the air, then, as ever.
Yeah. But the Morris On album, the Mother of All Morris, is the big thing that's happening right now, this moment, because that's a new release, yeah.
Well, the Morris On project, which goes, when did you actually start that? It was way back in 1947 or something.
I would have been 2 years old. It was 72. 1972 was the first Morris On album, and that was the first almost commercial album of Morris music. I mean, prior to that, all you could get was, you know, one or two authentic recordings of Squeezebox players playing Morris tunes. I came along and bullied John Kirkpatrick into being the centre of a project which was Morris dance tunes, which he knew a lot about, but with bringing my electric friends in, so Richard Thompson on electric guitar, Dave Mattox on drums, myself on bass, and Barry Dransford on fiddle. And that group got together in the studio, had a great time, had a lot of fun just putting down Morris tunes. And to our great surprise, it really took off, and it was the biggest selling album of that year in the folk market.
And not too strong to say, it's now become a classic of the folk genre, I think.
Well, it's not for me to say, but I wouldn't disagree with that, with what you're saying. I mean, it has influenced many, many people. I mean, at that time, in the early 70s, not many young people were taking up Morris. You know, it had a terrible reputation. still has a difficult reputation to handle. But in those days, you know, there was no hipness whatsoever about it. And we put it on the agenda for people at universities and colleges who started up their own Morris dance teams. A lot of people started to pay attention to it. And of course, it developed greatly from then. You now can go to a festival, a folk festival, and see blackface dancing. You can see women dancing. You can see people making up entirely their own dance repertoire. So it really started something.
Strong feet upon the ground, across the world I found, to move the seasons round. And here it's Morris dancing, as dunes across the desert sand, so move all nations hand in hand. The powwow dancer's beauty stands, and here it's Morris dancing, and here it's Morris dancing.
It's Ken here.
Hi, Ken.
Hi. What you were just talking about there made me think of something that I've always been quite curious about, actually, and that is the actual origins of Morris dancing, because we see so many different troupes, right?
Yeah.
Performing with different styles of dress as well as dance. You know, you get the ones that paint their faces black and so on. How, if there is such a thing as authenticity in Morris dancing, how authentic is it?
Right, well, this is a big, big question, and even the experts can't agree. I mean, no one really agrees about, you know, how it started and where it came from. There are, I won't go through all the possibilities. All I can say is that clearly it goes back to at least medieval times in England, probably a lot earlier, but the earliest depictions we have in paintings and so forth are, you know, kind of 1400s and very, very roughly speaking. But of course, Morris now must be very different from how it was. It's developed. I think you just have to go with it, feel flexible and loose about it, not try to be incredibly authentic necessarily, because there is no authentic really that we know of. The only details of dance steps and figures come from relatively recently, you know, come from the 19th century. So, you know, it's just a living, breathing, developing, moving tradition, and fine, go with it.
So there must have been a time when, let's say, it was revived. There was a revival, yes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a conscious revival in the Victorian period, conscious revival. And you get something like the Abbots Bromley Horn Dance, for example, which is related to the Morris. It's not a Cotswold Morris thing, but you get the horn dance, which was revived, and, you know, the vicar or the vicar's wife made outfits in the Elizabethan style for them to wear. So it was a conscious, arty movement in the late Victorian period.
Thank you.
then Sharp came along, Cecil Sharp and his friends, in the early 1900s, and really seriously collected it. But again, it wasn't just Sharp. You had women involved. Mary Neal in particular was particularly interested and formed a women's dance side. But again, it's quite an academic thing. I think in recent years, it's become much, much less academic, and people do what they want to do. And, you know, I think that's very healthy. That's probably more in spirit of the Morris.
So would you say if it wasn't for Sharp, we wouldn't be seeing Morris dancing as we know it now?
I think that's a fair comment, yeah, because it was definitely dying out, and Sharp collected it in the years before the First World War and around that time. And, of course, the First World War decimated so many young communities that people wouldn't have carried on with the dancing, I suspect. It was on its last legs anyway, and without that academic input, after the war, I very much doubt if we'd have seen much, almost if any, Morris, yeah, without that.
Yeah, what I'd like to know if you have a theory about this. It's, you know, seeing that this is really a very important part of our heritage in this country, why do you think it's viewed in such a negative way by people, and people make fun of it?
It is strange because, of course, the Celts can get away with it. The Scottish and Irish, you know, people seem to accept their dancing, their culture. It's a living tradition in both countries. But when it comes to England, I imagine that we think we're too sophisticated. I imagine that your average person thinks he or she is too sophisticated to go along with this effete, very strange tradition. But of course, Morris danced at its best by, you know, young, virile people leaping high and really attacking the dance and attacking the music. It's an exciting thing and a beautiful thing. And, you know, it's hip to me and to a lot of young people like, you know, Eliza Carthy and people who are on the album, young people, people who you and I have played for, like, the Outside Coping Crew and the Morris Offspring dance team in particular, young people who really give it a lot of energy. That's what should be seen in the media. That's what should be seen on TV. That would give an impression of Morris that people, I think, could appreciate and could take and would enjoy.
Say it loud and say it proud. Folk dancing, Morris dancing, is sex. Sex on legs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, to bring it round to our album, The Mother of All Morris, it's full of sex, you know, and very much so. There are two incredibly risque tracks. One is Outright Filth. a track written and sung by Jim Causley, totally in the tradition.
Oh, the lollipop man has a great big stick, and all that he charges is a penny a lick, and he gets it out whenever he can. He's a dirty old devil, is a lollipop man. Who is this with his spurty spout? A dribbly cone, you can suck it all out. And a knickerknocker glory, it's the ice cream man. But he cannot hold a candle to the lollipop man. For the lollipop man has a great big stick, and all that he charges is a penny a lick. And he whips it out whenever he can. He's a dirty old devil, is the lollipop man. Who is this with his grimy sack? You can have it up the front, or he'll shove it round the back. With his sooty old mess, it's the dirty coal man. But he'll never hold a candle to the lollipop man. For the lollipop man has a great big stick, and all that he charges is a penny.
And some of the other music on the album, I would say, is sexy in that it's driving, in that it's got great guitar, great drums, including Ken there playing. And, you know, so I think it gives the right impression of Morris. I would like to hope so.
Now, when you started all this, did you have a bigger mission to revive Morris dancing and bring it back into the public eye? Or did you just think, these are great tunes and I want to play them?
Yeah, it was that. It was the tunes. The tunes hit me first. The first time I heard those tunes, the recording of them, because I'd heard nothing before, I thought, wow, how English they were. They were unlike anything that I'd played or heard previously. You know, I was working with C.I. Spann, I'd previously worked with Fairport, and we were playing a lot of Irish and Scottish tunes.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so different.
When we did Great Grandson of Morrison together, yeah. And I came out and I played in the band,
you did.
I swear I heard you say so many times, that's it, no more Morrison albums. What happened?
Yes, well, that's true. You're telling the truth and I was lying. I thought we'd made the last one a couple of times, but then, you know, the live material came out and we thought it was good, and so we put a live album out, and, you know. And then finally, I'll tell you how this one came about, this last one, and it really, really will be the last one, trust me. Simon Kerr, it turned out, had approached Talking Elephant about making a Morris album, and Barry at Talking Elephant Records had asked me about doing a Morris album, so we put all the eggs in one basket, and we decided to make an album that incorporated Simon Kerr's ideas, which was inviting a lot of big names and names of people who were interested and had an affinity with the Morris, and any ideas that I might have had. And so that's what we've ended up with. We've ended up with a real great final last hurrah album with some great people on it. You know, and each track is different. Each track has a different quality to it.
I say there aren't that many Morris tunes left now, are there?
No, yes.
You'd be surprised. I think we've picked the best ones.
Yeah.
Let me say that. I think the best tunes, and they're great, have been recorded now. And of course, we don't just do that. We now, in amongst our ranks, compose tunes. And Ken, for example, has a track on the album, solo guitar piece. Lovely, lovely tune. And that's what people are doing now. You know, they're making up their own tunes, but influenced by it and in the style of the Morris.
So you're ready to pass the baton on to other people to run with. Yeah, yeah, it's a good
idea. Absolutely, yeah.
But I've got to tell you, I saw the Morrison Band at Cropredy a couple of years ago when you played there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Everybody that I spoke to agrees one of the most exciting, fabulous things that they'd seen at the festival ever. Brilliant stuff.
Nice. And thank you for saying that. I mean, we felt we really got through to the audience.
Oh, wow.
People were getting up and dancing in the audience.
It was magical, absolutely magical.
Wonderful.
Great stuff.
Yeah, and also I remember distinctly about what happened after that gig. I went back to the hotel and they'd let the room out to someone else.
Yeah, well, they obviously heard that you were a Morris music.
That's right.
No respect for you.
That's right.
But we hope, we live in hope that Morris will gain a better reputation and... Certainly, we've done our bit. We've done everything we can as musicians to try and present the music in a varied and a good way.
Obviously, all the best with everything you're doing, and delighted with Mother of All Morris.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. You are the daddy of All Morris, actually. So,
yeah, thank you very much, Phil.
Great stuff. And we'll see you down the road.
Yep.
Thanks, okay. Ashley.
Thank you, Ashley. Thank you.
Pleasure.
This has been a Folkcast interview special, presented by Ken Nicol and Phil Widows, with Ashley Hutchings in conversation. The Mother of All Morris is available from Talking Elephant Records at talkingelephant.co.uk. Full details at www.folkcast.co.uk. Interview is copyright Folkcast 2007.